When an obsessing human entity is stubborn, harsh, mocking, cruel, or even exhibits emotional coldness, saying, for instance, I don't care, when its harmful influences are pointed out, then we suspect that it harbors a nested negative entity within it. Questioning, we ask it to look inside of yourself and tell me what you see. If it says something dark, or anger, or a similar negative thing, we call out that thing, using the name given it by the entity it inhabits, and speak to it as if it were, as maybe it is, another entity, but this time obsessing the first one. Once that nested one has been called out and released, the formerly harsh, cold entity is abruptly revealed to be an ordinary troubled human soul, glad to be rid of the evil influence that had warped him or her. Releasement of this human soul is then usually quick and easy. Baldwin first and I also have sometimes discovered several to many layers of nested entities within one client. I have not tried to keep accurate count but usually ask the client to answer through finger movements whether any obsessing entities remain after the first ones discovered have been released. When an entity has others nested within it, the client's yes and no fingers may hesitate, hardly knowing whether to say, yes, more than one invader or no, only one. Whenever I see this hesitation I take it as a clue to ask the invader to look inside itself for others. This hesitation may occur even when the nested one is a harmless little soul like that of a lost child or an aborted infant. If the nested one is a dark one, however, its influence will have been apparent in the host entity's negative traits, and because of this host entity, therefore also in the client. 57. Does all this sound complicated? Actually, it is rather straightforward. Especially if we pause during conversation with an entity when we begin to suspect that it contains one nested within it, deal with the nested one first, and then with increasing ease with the obsessing entity that contained it and successively with any others, layered like onion skins. In theory, a systematic deepest first releasement seems most reasonable, but whatever sequence is most natural in each case should be followed. Remembering that some of the onion layers may represent non-human entities nested within human souls. See later chapters on non-human and dark entities. Chapter 3. Human souls released. In hundreds of sessions, literally hundreds of trapped entities have been released during the years of my active work in this field. It is impossible to relate more than a few of the interesting stories of these entities' lives and deaths. To illustrate some of the various types of personalities that have been freed and the various conditions of the sessions, I selected almost at random from the many notebooks in which they are recorded. These condensations do not reveal the personal feeling that the original verbatim scripts provide, nor do the written notes give the vivid tones of voice of the entity's words. Eve. This case is so simple and direct that it is almost a classic type. Eve. A lovely highly educated lady who had done remarkable things with her self-hypnosis, had not been able to rid herself of a fear of high places, a fear which had begun only a few years before. I explained to Eve that perhaps it was not really her own fear, maybe it belonged to a consciousness that was fearful and that a releasement might help. I was prepared to learn that the supposed invader might be anyone, perhaps a person who had committed suicide by jumping from a high place. Because this was the first time that Eve had attempted to channel, she was somewhat apprehensive and a bit tense. For this reason I deepened her hypnotic state a bit more than usual. Somewhat abbreviated, the conversation went like this: is there any soul or consciousness in Eve's body or aura, I asked, that is not part of Eve herself? Please answer through the fingers on the count of three, 1, 2, 3. The yes finger rose. Is there more than one such entity or consciousness that does not belong to Eve? The no finger rose. Thank you for letting me know that you are here. I'd like to know your name. Put the thought of your name into Eve's mind and she will speak it for you. Eve, just say out loud the very first name that comes into your mind, no matter what it is. Eve, Alice. Thank you, I said, for cooperating and letting us know who you are, Alice. How old are you? Alice, speaking through Eve's voice, old. Dead for years. Died in 65, heart failure and lots of things wrong. 70 years old and tired. Go to the moment when your soul leaves your body. Tell us about that. It is a release. I felt strange, lost. I saw people looking at the body and crying. They were not looking at me. No, they couldn't see or hear you, I agreed, but you could see and hear them. What did you do, Alice? Did you stay close to your body? I stayed for a while. Then I don't know. I feel light and pleasant, warm, comfortable. I see the sunshine. I feel happy. Drifting. Did you know that you were in Eve's body? Yes. She's my granddaughter. She loved me. I entered through her eyes, at the cemetery after I died. And really it was not to her advantage nor to yours that you entered her. But you didn't know that. Her body belongs only to her. You should have gone to the light, but you didn't know. When you entered her, you brought into her not only your love but your fears as well. Did you have fears that you brought into her? No. Well, I might have. Eve now feels afraid of high places. Were you afraid of high places? A leading question, although I seldom use leading questions. Yes, admitted Alice. And you brought into her your fear. How do you feel about making her fearful of heights? I'm sorry. Alice's voice was very low. Alice, why don't you use this marvelous little whisk broom like the one that Eve used when learning self-hypnosis and sweep away your fears and your tiredness and everything else you want to get rid of? And think yourself strong and well. Thoughts are very strong where you are, even stronger than they are for us here on the earth plane. Think yourself younger. You are 70. How young do you want to be? 25. Her answer was eager. Then think yourself to be 25. Stand up straight, strong and young and beautiful. Now watch for someone coming to meet you. Tell me when you see someone. I see a figure, a man. He is tall and slim, she said. I spoke to the man. Have you come to take Alice home, or do you need help yourself? I've come to get Alice, he replied. It seemed rather non-committal. Alice, hold out your hand, I suggested, and take his hand. How does it feel? Cool, was her answer. Do you like a cool hand? I was checking on this supposed guide. No, but his eyes are kind. I was still not quite convinced that this guide was appropriate for Alice if his hand felt cool to her. I invited another guide to come, a high, wise helper who wants to help Alice. I see a woman coming, Alice reported. Thank you for coming. Lady. Hold out your hand to Alice. Alice, how does it feel? Warm. And her eyes are gentle. Lady, I addressed her, hold out your other hand to the first guide and all three of you go home to the light, the higher dimension. And I invite any other souls who have heard my voice to come and follow these three. What do you see? Eve? Only shadows coming, she said. Alice, do you have a message for Eve as you go? I inquired. Be happy, said the grandmother. Eve, do you want to say anything to your grandmother? I love you, whispered Eve, with tears coming. Then goodbye, Alice. When you think of her, Eve, your thoughts and your love will reach her, she will know. But when she sends you thoughts and her love, you may or may not know consciously, because we are heavily veiled down here on the earth plane. Goodbye, Alice, I have enjoyed meeting you. Tell me when she is gone, Eve. 62. After a brief pause, Eve murmured, she's gone now. A recent telephone call to Eve confirms our expectations. She has had no more acrophobia since this session and proudly told of driving over one of the more adventurous mountain roads that used to frighten her. After a brief pause, Eve murmured, she's gone now. A recent telephone call to Eve confirms our expectations. She has had no more acrophobia since this session and proudly told of driving over one of the more adventurous mountain roads that used to frighten her. Joe. My friend Joe, a hypnotherapist in late middle age now deceased, was a reformed alcoholic who had been working with alcoholics for 20 years. He had written a book for reformed alcoholics. but he said he had never gotten over a craving for alcohol. He wanted to find the cause of the craving and also to check up on possible entities within him. With Joe in hypnosis, I asked for any entity or consciousness in him who was not a part of Joe himself to please come out and talk with me. An entity came at once, calling himself CB. In answer to my question, he told me, Joe was about 35 when I went into him, at the lodge, the meeting place for Alcoholics Anonymous. I was the first one to die in that lodge. Joe was shocked. I had cancer but was in the lodge for alcoholism. I was real sick for a long time with lung disease. Joe was good to me, got me in the lodge. I thought he'd be glad to have me come into him. I was a heavy drinker and a good gambler. I wouldn't let Joe gamble. I didn't want him to turn out like me broke. I kept him afraid to gamble. CB did not seem to perceive that if he were a good gambler he would not be broke. The spiritual guide who came to escort CB into the light looked like a picture, like little boy blue, only his clothes, he said, it was above the knee. I don't remember dying. Dot. Woo. I was making a right turn around the corner and the car came along and the bumper hit me. Goddamn, I got in an accident, didn't I? I died right there in the street, on the cobblestones. That bumper flattened me to the ground. I hit the right side of my head. I got knocked down in the brain and I come up and I can see me lying there, and my left leg is killing me and I'm out of my body, and I'm flying. I'm flying. W vertical bar oh, what a ride. Rock and roll. Jim spoke again as himself, though still in hypnosis, but people don't know about rock and roll yet. I explained, Harry, in the state you are in, past and future and present don't make much difference. Now I need to explain some things to you. Jim has a right to his own body without anyone else being in it. You have been using his energy and he feels tired without knowing why. And you have been trapped inside of him and haven't been progressing on your own spiritual path. You have had fun with him and have enjoyed the sense of humor together. We've been buddies for years. We've had a good time. Yes, and that has been good for you both. But it is time for you to leave, and when you go you can leave him some of your good humor. I suggested that he brush out of himself sadness, sorrow, alcoholism, and so on. He interrupted me, well, I tell you what. I'm not too proud of my life. I drank a hell of a lot of whiskey. I didn't apply myself to anything. But I'm not a bad guy. Old Jimmy here, he's a go-getter. Then with sudden insight he exclaimed, that's why I got into him, he'd do okay on the work and I could just ride along. I'm tired, he finished. Harry, finish brushing out the things you don't want to keep, like the alcohol addiction. You'll be given a chance to do better. Now look for a light. That car knocked the lights out of me. Oh, yeah, let me tell you how it is. When ya come out of your body, they raise ya, and ya see your body and then, have you ever? No, I don't suppose you have. Ya kinda hover like a spaceship over your body and it lifts ya, and you could I fly and soar, and the light ye're talking about is the truth, and you can slash Z to the truth. But flying may get boring after a while. Oh, you won't fly forever. Someone is coming to escort you to your own right place, much better than this down here on the earth plane. And you'll keep the friendship with Jim. Leave him some of your jesting, too. He needs a little bit. He asked, where did you get whiz? I've been learning lots in these past years. Do you know, Harry, that this is the year 1990 now? And you have been stuck down here since 1927. I won't argue with you. You want me to go so you can help Jim. You're helping him. And helping you, too, just as much as Jim. It will be much better for you, too. See or feel someone coming for you. Well, but you see, the thing is, he broke off suddenly, it's my mother, I think. She has that blue dress on again. Dot. And she has her hair all fixed up. I kinda took care of her. I ought to go with her now. He said he preferred not to call any of his old buddies to go with him. Oh, no, they drank too much. Just good old boys. Just because they drank, they weren't bad. But I'll go just with my mother now. Thank you for coming for Harry, Mother, I said. She wants to thank you, Mom, for finding me. He and his mother left, and Jim no longer saw them. Then it was Robert's turn, but I glanced at my watch and saw that time was passing fast. When I mentioned Robert, Jim, still in hypnosis, laughed. Ha, you're going to love him. I see your ship, a four-master. Robert sails. He is in 17th century clothes. 26. A real handsome fellow, ruddy white skin, black hair pulled back in a bun, sharp features, bold. He's the captain. English, he's English, all right, a damn pirate. I spoke to him. Robert, it is time for us to stop now, so I ask you to remain quiet in Jim until I can talk to you next time he comes. Just round up your personality into a comfortable little ball and stay quiet within him. Oh, madam, you ask a difficult task. When a ship is sighted, I might go off on my own. You wait until my heist is over. There's no time then, we're too busy, we'll go now. He did promise me that during this interval he would not kill nor injure anyone, and that when I called next time he would come to us. It sounded as if he felt free to leave Jim and return to him. Robert was ready and waiting when Jim went into hypnosis at the next session. It was Jim's own rational mind that did not believe he was present. I cannot see or hear him. There is a handicap. The handicap was only in Jim's own conscious mind, not in his subconscious awareness, for the conversation with Robert continued easily, through Jim's voice. Robert said that he had been in his ship, one that he had simply boarded in full daylight in Plymouth Harbor in 1614 and used as his private vessel. When I asked him gently if he was what people call a pirate, he paused quite a moment before answering yes. But Jim was aware of Robert's feelings that he was no ordinary pirate, for he felt that he was superior to the others, had a sense of discrimination, never attacking just any ship but selecting only those with treasure, and that he had a sense of honor. It was in 1617, he said, that southwest of the British Isles the ship was struck by a storm astern. Water came in through the back. The water caught me forced, the slash orc of the water was like it just burst me out, of my heart, out of the ocean and down, sucking my body down. It caught me in the right side and forced me up to a corner of the sun of the galley, and pushed me through my body, through my heart. I was free of the ship, I rose out of the water and up. It was dark. He shuddered. Was it cold, Robert? Not so much cold as dark. How old was Jim when you found him? 7. He needed a father. He suddenly sobbed. And you felt you could be a father to him? No, just a friend. I did not ask whether the sobs belonged to the 7-year-old child or to Robert. I told Robert that he could just pretend that all the dark, heavy things like anger, hate, jealousy, regrets, selfishness, greed, egotism, at all of those are like a filthy old overcoat, and just shed it from you and throw it away. You keep the wisdom you have learned, but get rid of that heavy dark overcoat. He indicated that he was doing so. And remember, Robert, that gentleness and humility can be strengths. Look inside yourself now and see the bright things there: courage, independence, and wisdom. And now think, did someone ever love you? A parent? A dog? A woman? Yes, a woman, Rachel. Remembering her, he could see the light, like light from the sun in the clouds. When the sun is setting, I'm going off the ship, to starboard, into the light. Yes, and Anna, my little daughter, is coming. She looks at me, and takes my left hand. He went with little Anna into the light, and blue takes its place, added Jim, when the light had withdrawn. He did not explain the color, and I did not inquire. Then I asked about the next entity in Jim. The fingers said there was none. There was a little uncertainty from the fingers, yes and no, that one entity wanted to come out but another wanted to remain hidden. After a while I asked if one or more of them were ready to go into the light. Yes. Are all of you willing to go? Yes. Jim spoke, "I see a woman in a carriage. She's in a black dress, dark circles around her eyes, angelic look, she's looking out, I spoke to her. Lady, Jim sees you. Why don't you change the color of your dress to a beautiful light blue? And make your eyes bright and clear, and smile? Look for the light, lady, that's the right direction. She's changing, her eyes are bright. The horse and carriage are moving into the clouds, silvery lined, beautiful clouds. The horse's color has changed from gray to dappled white. She goes with majesty." I did not ask more about the lady's story, for time was now short. But we felt that she was safely on her way into the light. Questioning Jim's fingers told us that he was now free of all invading entities and that this work was enough for today. The superconscious mind, answering through Jim's fingers, also said that there was no other important reason for Jim's insomnia. On returning to full awareness, Jim apologized, "I don't know whether my thoughts of being conscious were a handicap. I tried to go deep for you." I laughed, because he had been so deep in hypnosis that at times his voice was barely audible, and then a remarkable sequel occurred. Jim, the down-to-earth, left-brain type who had no previous experience of this sort, sat up on the cot and, gazing across the room, began to describe in detail how Robert had obtained his ship. He described the town of Plymouth, up here, above the harbor, and told where the owner of the ship was in a house right here. He's middle-aged, has white knee-high stockings and knee-length pants, and he's rounded, gesturing to show a round belly, and he's really upset about something. Something about the barrels isn't right. They contain white powder sugar? No, I don't know what it is. Robert knows where the crew is and where the owner is. He and his crew just board the ship in mid-afternoon. Only two men are on board as guards. One just shrugs and thinks, "Why should I fight and die for what little pay I get?" He tells the other guard, "Come on, let's go," and they just leave. Robert and the crew have to get the ship out of harbor while the wind is right. They just sail off, tacking back and forth. When I expressed amazement that Jim was now reading the Akashic records, no longer expressing Robert's individual words and thoughts, he explained to me, "I just tell what I see." To him it was as simple as that, and he seemed amused at my interest in his sudden exhibition of psychic sensitivity. Jim felt that his early morning wakefulness was probably from Robert's influence. As captain, Robert was a light sleeper and may have had a habit of waking to check the ship mentally during the night. Jim had been specific that the time of his own waking was 3:36 a.m. Undoubtedly there was a reason for such pinpoint accuracy, but I had not remembered to ask the questions that would have explained it. If a question is not asked, the client seldom offers information voluntarily because of the slight drowsiness of the altered state. After returning to full awareness, however, the client may fill in many details which were not verbalized during the hypnotic state. In Jim's case, the surprise was that he relapsed spontaneously back into an altered state and was reading what he saw: world memories, Akashic records, the memory of nature. A month later, I phoned Jim's home to check on one or two points in my written account. His wife answered and reported that although both of them still had restless periods in the early morning, as also do a good many other people these days, and still had strange dreams, not nightmares, Jim now slept definitely better than before, is a lot more restful than before, and he feels such a relief, has no anxieties anymore. The pressure is off. Laughing, she added, "He is easier to live with now, and it was a joy to live with him before. I don't know how much more of this I can stand." Dr. Winifred Lucas included Jim's story in her two-volume work, Regression Therapy, A Handbook for Profession ALS, 1993. I want to express my appreciation to her for allowing me to use it here. Jim himself gave me full permission to use his real name, though I have chosen to use only his first name here. A white. He's kinda pale, long brown hair, nice looking, lot of love in his eyes, a nice person. A hardened, Sullied adult entity may regress back to the innocence of childhood as he sheds the earth heaviness and returns home. In this instance, it was not the entity himself who appeared as a child, but his guide, a being he could trust and love. After Joe returned to normal consciousness, he said that he remembered CB very well. CB's craving for alcohol had apparently been added to his own. CB thought that Joe, as a good friend, would be glad to have me, a typical attitude for obsessing entities who feel friendly. They have no understanding of the mutual disadvantages. Joe's craving was markedly diminished after CB was gone. Ted. Sometimes a parasitic entity may try to convince the therapist that the relationship is a real benefit to the host, and in some respects, perhaps it may actually be so. In one case, the host, Ted, was a blind man in a responsible professional career, and the trapped entity was a young male paraplegic, Tim, who tried to persuade me, speaking through the host, that he was the source of the blind host's remarkable clairvoyant seeing. Ted is my legs and I am Ted's eyes, he told me. For a moment I was at a loss, not wanting to expel the entity if that would take away the only sight that Ted did have. It occurred to me to ask Ted, in hypnosis, if he had a guide or master. He said yes, and told me the name of his master. I asked the master if he would please tell me what to do. He said, through Ted's voice, Louise, let me handle this. 64. Tim is not Ted's eyes, Ted's vision is his own. Tim, come on down, move down in Ted's body, on down, father on down, let him go, Ted, clear down into his feet, let him go, Ted, now, Louise, you can take it from here. All this time I had been sitting silent and passive except for writing down what was coming from Ted's lips. When Tim was turned over to me, I reminded him that thoughts are very powerful where you are. Just think yourself well, come clear out of Ted and stand up on your own strong legs, with your head up, your shoulders back, thus using the powers of mental/emotional forces to assist Tim to transform his astral limbs, still paralyzed simply because he had expected them to be, into straight, useful, healthy astral limbs. This type of healing is almost always swift and complete for disembodied souls. For bodies that are still living, it is a slower process but still powerful, mind over matter. I thank Ted's master for his invaluable assistance. Both Ted and Tim were free now. Ted still had his astral vision and Tim had useful legs again. Dolores. Occasionally an invader feels that it is helpful to the host in psychological or social ways. Such an entity was Dolores, who said, through the man she had entered, that she was a seamstress in an English factory and had died in 1844. Dolores was a child soul, self-centered, cheerful, lacking both foresight and hindsight, and socially insensitive. She described herself thus, I didn't have much religion, just enjoyed living, was carefree, didn't have much responsibility. I wasn't 65, married. I got sick, something inside of me was wrong. I had a lot of pain. Might have been pregnant, I don't know. I enjoyed sex a lot, there were no doctors. I just died, went into Ben when he was 21, I chose him because of his energies. He needs to be himself. He wasn't much fun, too serious. Maybe I'm not serious enough. It was interesting to watch him. He went through a lot of conflict and felt strange whenever he was having fun. Maybe you helped him have fun, I suggested. True. But he's helped me, too. He's a sourpuss, don't enjoy nothing. Too responsible. But he seems to have purpose. Maybe that conflict was due to you, Dolores. True. It's like we are opposites. Now, Dolores, what would you like for your new life outside of Ben? A pretty dress. No, not anything earthly like that. What characteristics? She seemed to consider, are you ready to start growing up now? Yes. Watching Ben was interesting, I was watching what height feels and goes through. It's easier to understand others this way, when I'm inside him. It's hard to do when you are in a physical body, and he experiences me but doesn't know it. He's trying to learn so much it scares him. My feelings are so different, and he feels them, and his heart is drawn toward it but his mind doesn't know how to put it together. What he was taught by society is so different from these things. He's showed me a side of life I didn't know. I didn't relate to others or understand others. He showed me there are two sides, enjoyment and responsibility, and you have to get them together. Ben helped me to learn to think.